As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Into the Fray. I've got a number of important things to mention before we get to my interview. First of all, On the Trail of UFOs Dark Sky is now available on most major video-on-demand platforms, including Prime Video, iTunes, Apple TV, Google Play, Microsoft, Fandango Now, and Vudu. If you enjoy Dark Sky, please, please, please leave a review, especially on Amazon. And I am humbled to announce that you can cast your vote for Into the Fray for the first annual Paranormal Podcast Awards, presented by Paranormality Magazine. ITF is nominated for not only Best Interview Podcast, but also Podcast of the Year. Please head to paranormalityradio.com and click on Podcast Awards Voting. Just a reminder that I have plenty of Beyond the Fray, Paramalgamation, and Bigfoot books here, ready to sign and ship. You can PayPal $19.99 to info@beyondthefraypublishing.com. Choose one or both. That $19.99 does include free shipping within the United States. If you are curious about how much it costs to ship internationally, email me, shannon@intothefrayradio.com. A new intro segment here will be Alpha Shoutouts. What is an alpha, you ask? Well, over at patreon.com, alphas are people that are pledging $20 or more a month because they just, I guess, happen to love Into the Fray that much, which is truly humbling and amazing. But you know what? Any of my patrons are extremely important to me. I don't think they realize just how much their support means to me, but also really for everybody to keep Into the Fray going. Yes, I do have some ads within Into the Fray, but honestly, it is my Patreon members that keeps this show ticking. So, Alpha shoutouts: Anthony Mikulski, Azriel, Chad Irving, Andrew of Black Triangle Coffee, Eric Garcia, Crystal Bowman, Isis Fernandez, Karina, John, Nightwing, Randy, Salcido Paranormal, Roy Daniel, Ted Cheever, Steve Alarcon, Josh Arthur, Chad Ralston, Jack Cavender, Richard Rose, Sean Kevin Jason, Tyler DeMoney, Stephen Bashore, Charles Mann, and Sticky Sound Zine. So a huge thanks to them for their $20 or more a month pledges. I do not take that lightly. Thank you all so much. All of my patrons means the world to me and to keep ITF going. If you are interested in possibly becoming a Patreon member, supporting the show, and getting a ton of extra content for yourselves, for instance, there's already 100 extra episodes over there on Patreon right now and counting. And we also do the live video chats. You get signed books, a Discord room, stickers, all sorts of goodies over there. So head to patreon.com and search Into the Fray and see which level may fit best for you. If you have shorter stories and would like to leave them on the ITF voicemail line, call 833-222-9001. If you run out of time around the 5-minute time limit mark, simply call right back and pick up where you left off. Again, that is 833-222-9001. And of course, last but not least, homepage for Into the Fray is intothefrayradio.com. You can actually find links at the top of the page for pretty much everything that I just mentioned. But again, get you some of that dark sky and leave us a review would be much appreciado. Okay, let's get on with the show. So on this edition of Into the Fray, I have James Fay on with me, and you may know him better as Bobo from Finding Bigfoot, but James does a whole damn lot more than that, and he certainly lives and breathes Bigfoot. He is a regular on the Bigfoot conference circuit, co-hosts Bigfoot and Beyond with Cliff Barachman, and regularly gets out into the bush and visits purported active properties. Now, this last bit that I just mentioned is what we will be focusing on for this chat. There are, what, Bobo, maybe 3,000-plus interviews out there with you discussing your first Bigfoot experience, what got you into this, how tall are you, but we're not going to go down that road today because there are plenty of other outlets for people to hear that stuff. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for that, and thank you for the introduction.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the location that we were actually just starting to talk about, but decided to really jump in here. The location we're going to chat about today is Donna and Greg's property in Washington State. And listeners, if you are not familiar with this property, maybe you just tuned into ITF and you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, please go back to episode 300 and get acquainted. It is not a short episode. It is a 3-hour long episode, and I even played a very small portion of some of the audio that David Ellis of the Olympic Project captured, along with the help of Donna, of course, right off her back porch, because she said, and it's damn near a quote, she said, "I will be damned if I have to walk down into the woods to grab a recorder," and that was on her own property, right? So, Bobo, how did you come to learn of Donna and Greg's property?
Well, I keep in touch with Dave and Dave Ellis of the Olympic Project and Derek Randles and Shane Courtson and those guys. So I hear what's going on, and I heard about this property, how amazing it was. And Dave shared the audio with me, and I was like, man, that's insane. I got to go to that place. And it was for sale, and they thought I was going to sell pretty quick. And so I had a week off, and I jammed up there and spent, I think, probably like 3 nights with Dave there. And then another two or three by myself. And I didn't have anything for sure happen until he left. The day he left, and that was after Donna and Greg had been there visiting also. They hadn't been back there for like a month or two or more. They hadn't been there in a while. And as soon as they all drove away, I was cleaning up the, you know, my stuff and getting everything organized, getting ready to leave myself in like in a couple hours. And as soon as they drove away, it was less than a minute or two, this huge rock banked off the house, hit the house, not a huge rock, but probably the size of my, a little smaller than my fist, went off the side of the house and ricocheted and hit the gas tank, the propane tank out there, and made a big ping sound after it ricocheted out the propane. First it hit the house and it hit the propane, and then it ricocheted all that back into the house. So it had a lot of force, but I couldn't find any real distinct, I mean, there's, you know, it's Pacific Northwest there on the edge of the water. So there was marks where, you know, branches had snapped off and hit the house and that sort of mark. So I couldn't really find where the rock hit. So it sounded loud. It was so loud. I thought it was going to like split the siding or something, you know, and then wasn't any like thing that stood out really that you could point to and say that was definitely it.
Okay. That's interesting. So not only was it after David left, but Donna, cause you know the story and you know how really, I guess, infatuated and interested they were in Donna, it would seem, because she was there so often by herself, 95% plus of the time she was there alone. So she actually had come up there and had visited and then left.
Yeah, they came up for the afternoon and they had to grab a couple things out of they had just a few things left in the garage they grabbed, and then we talked for a couple hours. And did you interview them on your show?
Yes, I did. And actually I visited the property myself.
Yeah, what a beautiful spot. Like, they're trying to sell it to me. They're like, hey, we'll work something out with you. And I was like, oh man, I'd love to get this place, but it was too much.
Yeah. So, okay, that is really damn cool that she actually had popped by. I mean, because what we were working off of is they were watching her an awful lot. And that is also interesting that the rock can't, I know right where you're talking about. And that is where they would peek over the fence right there by that front entryway. And then that propane tank is over in that same area. So that's where they would find the board pulled away, right, a lot of the time, and where they'd be really just kind of peeking in at things over at her house.
I was really surprised. You look on Google Earth, the property, you're like, that, like, what? Why were they coming by there all the time? It just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and do you think that they drop in, you know, out of the Olympics there? I don't really know, as the crow flies, how far that would be. But I suppose for something that moves around as much as we assume that they do, probably wouldn't be a long trek for them if they wanted to come down in there for visits or food. Like you said, not really sure why they did that. But do you know how far the Olympics are from her property? Any guess on that?
Whatever I said, I'm going to be wrong, but it'd be probably at least a day's or a full night's walk for them. You know, I'm sure they can walk pretty fast. It sounds like they cover a lot of ground. I've heard them walking at night. They cover ground, but yeah, it'd be at least a full night. I don't know how often they do that. From talking to the local tribe out on the coast, the Quinaults, some of the elders out there that really knew about it, they said that they have their own ranges they stick to, and that, twice a year they'd get, or once a year they'd get together. Once a year was the big one. They'd have a big conference at the spring where all the Bigfoots got together in a couple different spots in the peninsula. And people reported seeing like 30, 40 at a time during those periods. And what they said, that Quinault said, was that they'd divide up territory like drainages, you know, the different river and creek drainages. So there was never like any beast. They'd say like, because in the spring they'd see who didn't make it through the winter, some old guy didn't make it. They'd say, all right, like whatever, big hairy, his spot's open. So they find a younger guy and say, okay, it's yours now. Like a guy coming up in his own manhood or adulthood. And that's how they kept from fighting.
I love the stories from Native peoples, right? They've got the utmost respect for these things out there, especially in those areas. And they know that they're real and they have no qualms about saying it, right?
Yeah, they seem to have, I mean, I know like down, you get down to the southeast, the Seminoles have a lot of stories about them being, you know, tightly interwoven, like interacting with them. But it seems like the Pacific Northwest was a whole different level of the tribes up there along the coastal areas, their relationship with the Sasquatch, Bigfoot. I mean, it's still deeper to this day. Like, they interacted more. Like, a lot of those, you know, like the Southwest and Midwest and Upper Plains, like, those tribes, they wanted nothing to do with them. They were always, like, kind of a bad omen, whereas Pacific Northwest, they were kind of more like live and let live with each other. And they did trade. They supposedly, you know, they traded a lot. And they could communicate. What they told me also was this: same elders up there, was they told me that their grandparents told them that they would communicate by, like, it would be part like a third common words, like English. I mean, not English, but Quinault language, and then a third like hand gestures, like pantomime, like miming stuff, and then a third like telepathy, like thought projection. They said how they would communicate.
And did all of them believe in that third item, that telepathic communication between them and the Bigfoot people?
All the ones I've talked to have all said that.
I mean, what are your thoughts about the telepathy side of Bigfoot?
As far as, like, yeah, the mind speak or telepathy or, you know, just unspoken nonverbal communication. I've had a couple of things that I thought were, but I've had one case. I was just talking about this the other day. I was reminded of it. I had one case where it was for sure, like, to me, proven that it exists, and it was between me and a really close friend. And this is right before the internet, like late 90s. And he was in love with his girlfriend. He asked her to marry him, and she left, and she was working at some kids camp, some like theater camp out in upstate New York. And he had, you know, didn't know where it was. And they communicated by letters. And he had a letter from her with the camp. He had to call a payphone at the camp to get a hold of her, and it was a total pain in the butt. She wasn't at that place where the phone was. She was only there every few days. So it was all the info was in this envelope, and I dropped him off at the airport. And I'm like the ultimate avoider of traffic. Like, he had to be a really good buddy for me to drive him down to the San Francisco airport. And there was a good swell coming in. I was trying to catch the tide up in Marin, go out there and surf out of Marin. So I was trying to get across the Golden Gate Bridge in time and before the rush hour. And I was just flying out of the airport. I was like totally speeding, heading out. And then I got this, I heard his voice in my head just yell, Bobo. And like this total urgency, like, you know, like he needed me. And I just cut across, I just whipped across four lanes of traffic and went back into that return circle to go back to the airport. And I dropped him off at Terminal 1. And for some reason, I was drawn to Terminal 2. I parked at Terminal 2, walked in. And I walked in, I walk in, and within 10 seconds, I see my buddy, like, tears coming out of his, you know, coming down his cheeks. And he's super sad. And I was like, Snowdy. And he's like, whoa. And he's just blown away. He says, no way. I said, yeah, man, I heard your voice scream. And he goes, I was praying with, he was like a pretty hardcore Christian guy. So I was praying and praying and asking, you know, for you to come back. And I was just asked God to please have you come back for whatever reason. I go, dude, it worked because I heard your voice. It wasn't the voice of God, but it was his voice. I heard it clear in my head, Bobo. And I came back, and also the whole thing going. And he said he was drawn to Terminal 2 for some unknown reason. And yeah, I just ran into him there. And we went out to my truck, and it was laying there on the passenger floor was his envelope with all the information out that he needed to get hold of his girlfriend.
That is an awesome story.
Yeah, I know that that's real. Like, I told Meldrum one time, I kind of stumped on this one. I was talking to Dr. Meldrum. I said, hey, Jeff, I said, you're a religious guy. He's like, yeah. I said, and you pray? And he said, yeah. I said, well, see, when you pray to God, do you have to yell out loud so he can hear you? Or do you just say it silently in your head? He goes, I do it silently in my head for the most part. I said, yeah, well, everyone does, right? He said, yeah. I said, well, can't God answer people? He said, yeah. I said, is it a loud, audible voice that everyone hears, or do people hear it in their head? He goes, usually it's they hear it in their head. I said, yeah, well, then if you're religious and you think that's all true, then obviously we were designed to have the capacity to send and receive unspoken messages.
And something that I've brought up before is, you know, the word paranormal gets tied in then with the three-letter word woo. But, you know, in and of itself, the definition of paranormal is just something just slightly kind of abnormal, something we're not used to. It's, yes, a little maybe weird to most of us, but the word paranormal almost becomes a dirty word, especially when you tie it to Bigfoot. But you know, this whole thing where we only use 10% or whatever the heck it is of our brains. Well, maybe those guys just have more of their brains unlocked and they can just do what your friend did just a whole lot damn more of the time.
Right, exactly. I don't even call it paranormal. I call it pre-normal. We just don't know how to understand it yet.
I love that. Pre-normal. Yes, I like it. And you know what? People probably do need to open their minds just a little bit more to stuff like that, to the pre-normal. Damn, that's cool, Bubbo. You're going to need to start that hashtag like all over the Bigfoot community. I like that.
I keep saying I'm going to trademark it or whatever.
You probably should. Yeah, I would. Because honestly, you know it's true when they say, oh, the paranormal and Bigfoot, you're out of your mind, you're freaking crazy. But there are animals and there are, I mean, creatures in this world that can take the cuttlefish, you know, that can camouflage itself so well. And that just looks insane. That looks paranormal. But now it's normal. Yeah,
if you were describing that to someone who'd never seen one, like some fisherman back in the 1700s talking about this thing's ability, it'd sound paranormal for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, they put a cuttlefish on a black and white tiled in a tank, you know, and the quote unquote floor of the tank is this black and white tile looking thing, and it blended right in. So yeah, if someone way back in the day saw that, they would need a diaper. They would go, this is witchcraft.
Yeah, totally.
So in swinging back to what the Quinaults were saying, I was at the Brown property, also in Washington State, and we ran into one of the native peoples there, and he had lived there his whole life, and there was a creek that ran through the valley back there behind the Browns' property. And he was out there catching salmon. The salmon are running through there at that time, and he said that he'll catch one, and he'll leave one. You know, he never doesn't leave one for the Sasquatch people there. That is just something that he has always been taught to do, and it's something that he taught his kids and his grandkids to do.
Yeah, and it worked for him, right?
Yes, he's never had any problems with them. He just has nothing but respect, and he knows not to, you don't step on the big guy's toes.
Most of the natives I've talked to say they just give him the first big one, and that's it.
Yeah, give him the first biggest one. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep, and if they don't, because they set the natives up their fish with drift nets, like, or not drift nets, but they just, you know, stretch a net across the river. And they said, if, you know, they'll leave it set for like 6 hours, 8 hours or whatever overnight, a couple hours, whatever. They leave it there unattended and they'll come back and bears will pull the net out too. But how the bear does it is the bear bites it and then backs up until it can't back up anymore. And so it's like the net will be dragged up like, you know, 50 feet, 100 feet, whatever. Whereas the Sasquatches, they pull it in like a human does. They pull it hand over hand so it piles up at their feet and they pull the fish out. So they know when it's a bear or a Sasquatch. And it's usually a Sasquatch, and it's when they haven't paid the proper tribute. They haven't paid the rent to the landlord.
Yeah, it gets you into trouble.
Yep, I know a guy that just said he wasn't even thinking about it. He's just run style, like with the nets. He was just drift boat fishing, and he does guide service. He's a Quinault guy. He has a guide service up there. And he said that he usually, you know, he'll catch one and leave it out when he fishes up there. And he didn't this time. This guy caught a big one. And, you know, it was a client, so he didn't even think about it. And he said they didn't lay it out on the bank. And all of a sudden, this huge, like, rock the size of a car tire came flying out and just hit the river there and just drenched him. You know, the thing. And he said, like, a message, you know, we got the message. And he took off and he came back later and, you know, the next day or whatever and laid up a couple salmon there on the bank as, like, a peace gesture.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, as much as I love the subject of Bigfoot, and I may have had a few, I say may, a big may, have had a few auditory experiences. I didn't see what made it, so can't say it was Bigfoot, of course. But hearing Donna talk about the fact that she got to the point where it would get dark and she would go upstairs because she just felt like she was being watched less, like they couldn't see her quite as well. And she wouldn't even change in her bedroom. She would go in the closet and shut the door. You know, you brought up the possibility of, you know, well, them saying, hey, Bobo, do you want to buy this property? As much as you love Bigfoot, would you, and it may be a different difference in, you know, male and female and, you know, being alone and things like that, but would you want to be on a property like Donna's where you had this kind of activity every night where even maybe you were worried about any animals that you might have or, you know, kids coming over, whatever the situation might be? Would you want to own a property like that?
That's the goal. Yeah. I mean, that's like dream spot.
Yeah. Cause you're down in Oregon. So are you in,
I'm in Northern California.
Northern California.
I'm about 70 miles below Oregon.
I mean, you are in damn good squatch country, right? So
But I live on the beach. Yeah, it was kind of like, I was planning on moving into the mountains again, but I had this little beach house for a super cheap rent, and I was like, it's you know, it's a cool little spot, but I was always planning on getting back up the mountains. It just, for whatever, there's been a variety of reasons why I haven't yet, but I'll be doing that within the next 6 months for sure. I'll be transitioning. I'm going to move up to Oregon and get in a squatchy spot.
Yeah, I bet Cliff has got his eyeballs open trying to help you out with that, right?
I'm going to stay on the coast more. He's back up by Mount Hood. I was going to stick to the coastline somewhere. But yeah, probably around the story, like the mouth of the Columbia River. We'd be a couple the places we're looking, I'll be within a 2.5 hour to 3 hour drive at the most of Cliff. So it'd work out pretty good. We were figuring we'd get together like maybe twice a month and record a couple of podcasts. And so I'd still be seeing him. We'd go to the museum and record there, just do some live broadcasts from the museum. So it'd work out pretty good for that too, as far as being in the same room, you know, doing a cast together.
It does help. It helps the dynamic of a show when you can actually be physically in the same room. What kinds of things, when David Ellis was there at Donna's property, were you guys implementing any tactics, or what was going on when the both of you were still there?
The first couple of nights we were there, we just chilled and just tried to see what would happen. And I think it was the third night. I think he was there three nights. Then the third night I did some calls. We heard a couple of things in the distance, but nothing. Yeah, just, you could, who knows what it was. I mean, there's a couple things that wasn't like, you couldn't identify them right off the bat, or, you know, they were so faint, didn't show up on recordings. And so nothing definitive happened at all. The only thing definitive that happened when I was there was the rock being thrown when they left. Greg and Donna left first, and then I think Dave left about a half hour after those guys, probably something like that. And then The Rock came flying in. But it was like 2 in the afternoon, 3 in the afternoon. It was like broad daylight when it happened. And the way The Rock hit and the way the tree line's there, the thing had to be pretty close. It couldn't have thrown it from far off. It probably came across the road in the daylight.
Yeah, and the fences are not short little. These are not little picket fences, everybody. So they're quite tall.
Yeah, they're taller than me.
Yeah, and you're a tall dude.
Yeah.
That property, the way it's situated too, is that you can't see the neighbors at all. At least not from most of the parts there. And I don't know if you remember this story, but it's one that she told on 300, and that is the pissing on the fence, on the gate that was normally drawn across the drive there. And that's the fact that where the urine started was up on the rung right before the top rung. And we're kind of going, now that was a tall creature right there to be able to hit that top rung and then for it to fall down from there. Plus, oh, I wanted to bring this up to you too. Something that Donna had brought up, I think to you as well. And she mentioned your name and said, yeah, this is when I think Bobo was sold on the fact that I was actually seeing stuff, is that she mentioned a greasy, oily forehead when she saw one of these at some point. I think it was the fence peeker, and she mentioned an oily forehead. So that is something that you have heard others mention.
Yeah, we've always known they're like secreted a lot of oil. And then, you know, Doug Hychek's running that project now where he's collecting it, and they're actually chemically analyzing what the oil is. And I know that he's coming out with that new Legend Meets Science too. They're going to cover all that in his new documentary.
Are you going to be in that one?
No, I don't think so. No, it's science based.
They haven't asked you yet. That's all. They're getting to it.
They're not up with the modern science.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we already know that you want to own a property like this. So, I mean, have you gotten close to even finding one that you thought would be legitimate, like Donna's?
Yeah, I actually was going in on one with the guy. It's a long story, but it was an old college roommate, surf buddy, and he ended up, classic jackass move. Well, I knew we were good bros for 25 years, so I thought, and I did a handshake agreement, and I ended up losing a ton of money, and he ended up keeping the property and just screwing me over on the whole thing.
Oh.
So, but yeah, that one, I stayed there a couple weeks, and in that time, I was there for about 6 weeks. In that time, I heard 3 distinct vocalizations, full classic Ohio, a couple of Ohio howls. About one was in 5 in the morning, and then it got return calls. It got whoop return calls down the creek, right below the window, the bedroom window. The return calls, and it did like some strange call back. I don't even know how to describe it. And then another time in just middle of the afternoon, like 1 in the afternoon, sunny, warm day, early fall, late summer, it let out a full Ohio howl. Just within, no way was it more than 200 yards from the property line, because then it backed up to Green Diamond Forestry, and they owned several hundred thousand acres there. That was, you know, and then the neighbor to the north was the state and national redwood parks, which is another however much acres that, you know, miles and miles, hundreds of thousands of acres. So, I mean, it was good habitat for sure.
What state was that property in?
That was in Northern California, in the redwoods up there on the coast.
I mean, if you were a Sasquatch, would you choose to be more in the climate of Northern California, or would you go all the way up into the Olympics where it's quite a bit rainier?
I think for them, it doesn't bother them at all. I mean, personally, I'd be down here if I was one of them, probably. I mean, there's pretty much just about as good a food sources here as there.
Yeah, like I have several birds, parrots that I keep, and they have an oil gland that they reach back with their beak and they take the oils and they rub it all over their feathers. And of course that weatherproofs essentially their feathers to a certain extent. And I can just imagine a squatch would be the same. I mean, I don't imagine them picking at their bum for that kind of thing. I'm just saying that I think that, yeah, they're pretty weatherproofed, as you mentioned.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what I was, yeah, the oil is like, you know, when you have like, when you ever have a retriever dog, like a bird retriever, like a Labrador or something that swims in the water, like spaniels, they put out an oil to just like seals and sea lions, they put out that lanolin oil that weatherproofs them. And so that's obviously, I mean, that's what I always just figured. It seemed like that was the common sense, what the residue was when they touched things like with their hands and the face prints and palm prints and all that.
Something I always laugh about, though, when I'm talking Bigfoot is, you know, the Southern Bigfoot and Florida Bigfoot, they just, sometimes they just seem grumpier. And I'm like, it's no wonder. I mean, they're down there just sweating their bags off, hotter than hell. They're probably going, we need the Squatch razors out. Because I don't think as a Bigfoot that being down there would always be very pleasant.
It's got to be hell. I mean,
yeah,
I can't imagine anything like, you know, but it's crazy. Like, when you look at the sun bears down in the tropics, they're like the furriest bear. You know, it's weird how like there's certain animals, like you see those tropical monkeys that have real thick, pushy hair. You know, it's never below 80 degrees where they're out. So it's, I don't know, they're probably a little more resilient, or they're not as soft, obviously, as humans are. But still, I mean, when it's like 105 down in South Louisiana, and it's 95% humidity, that's brutal for anything.
Right? They got to be going, screw this noise. What am I doing here? Trying to relocate.
Yeah, and none of the Bigfoot, I mean, all the Bigfoot researchers I know down there, they just kind of basically take, you know, late, like mid-June through early September, they just kind of basically take that off. Like, they'll go out at night sometimes, but they don't do a whole lot of research in that time of the year because it's just so, so rough.
Yeah, it's brutal. And some people, like me, if you go anywhere near Skeeter country, you are just covered, right? Just covered in bites.
I'm like, I'd like to have a contest with you to see who gets bit more.
I don't know. I think I'd win. I don't know what it is, but I could. Low, like, I love the show Naked and Afraid. Could never go on that damn show because the bugs would just, they'd be like, oh, there's Shannon. Hey, we heard about you. No, I could never do it.
Yeah, one of our producers on our show, her sister was a producer on Naked and Afraid, and she was there just 2 weeks, her first shoot. I don't know where they were, some tropical place. And she ended up in the hospital for 9 months and, like, had multiple surgeries and was still sick as hell. Like, even after that 9 months when she got out, she was still thrashed. And I guess, like, that was not uncommon on that show. Like, there were other crew members that caught crazy tropical diseases and got really thrashed from it.
Yeah, there's been several of them that have had extended hospital stays. They get some kind of crazy disease, or they get malaria or whatever. I'm going, I don't know, guys. I don't know if that was quite worth it. I know you love the challenge, but damn. Or that producer that got, he got bit by that Fertilance snake, and then part of his foot rotted off.
Oh, man, I never watched that show. I mean, I watched a couple episodes of it, but I never really followed it much. So, yeah, the contestants that end up in the hospital, too, is what you're saying, right? Not just the crew?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, I'm sure that you've got plenty of fans that are on that show or produce that show, because I have a few of those guys that listen to my show, and they're really big into Bigfoot and paranormal stuff. So I'm sure that... you got a lot of fans from them, but that show is, I just like to put it on in the background, and I'm going, you know what? Things aren't so bad. I could be being eaten alive and not being able to eat, which I get super grumpy if I don't eat. So I would probably murder my partner and eat them pretty quickly. They would be in danger. So yeah, I don't know if I could ever roll with the punches for Naked and Afraid.
No, I'm definitely not cut out for that. I could take the physical discomfort, the rain, the humidity, like whatever, like cold and all that. So I could handle that. But the mosquitoes, for anything biting me, flying around, like multiple of them, I'm out.
I can only imagine, like, I get kind of like a pirate or a trucker. I tamp it down for the show. I'm pretty good about it. But I could just imagine the expletives that would be flying out of my mouth within like 20 minutes. I'm like, bring the truck back. I'm out of here. This is too much.
Yeah, I'd be canceled if I was out there
Yeah, Animal Planet's like, hey, Bobo, listen, you have certain things that you have to uphold in your mannerisms and actions.
Yeah, they did a lot of editing the first couple seasons, because I came straight off, you know, commercial fishing, where you just every other word's like an F-bomb or whatever, right. Like you just cuss all day long. And then switching over, like, hey, there's a lot of kids watching this show, like, you know, there's a lot of kindergartners and grade school kids watching this, so you got to really watch your language. And we all got really good at that. We did, after the first, even, yeah, probably by the end of the first season, I was pretty good. And the other guys were always really, because Cliff had been a teacher and, you know, worked in that environment, so he was used to watching his language. But yeah, definitely it took a little bit of a adaptation to be TV friendly the whole time.
Yeah, I'm sure they slip out sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not too much, but they would once in a while. Because you know they're going to beep it anyway, so you just try not to. Because you don't want to mess up like something good, you know?
Right. I've gotten better as time has gone on. I can pause and choose my words a little more carefully. But, hey, zipping back to the property that you were going to buy and then your friend screwed you over, which sucks, by the way. What you mentioned three vocalizations. What kind of vocalizations were those?
Ohio Howls, and then the 5 a.m. one was Long Ohio Howl, and it was answered by two sets of whoops from the same, sound like the same individual, same location, gave a couple whoops, and then another 30, 40 seconds did two more whoops, and that's all I heard. I heard some movement down below. I couldn't tell if one was going up or one was going down. I assumed that the one that whooped came back up the creek, heading back up the mountain to where the Ohio call came from. It sounded like, you know, it was calling for it. And then it said, like, yeah, I'm here. And then I heard some movement, but I couldn't tell which direction it was going for sure, but I thought it was going up the hill.
So you didn't really hear too much at Donna and Greg's property?
No, it was pretty dead when I was there. Like, I'd hear, like, little things, but, like what was that? Like, just strange little sounds. And, you know, you're, after hearing, like, the whoopee man and all that, you're thinking, yeah, that stuff's on your mind, so you're tuned for it. So I don't know. Nothing that you could identify that say that was squatchy.
Were you sleeping in that that extra little outside room, that separate area, or were you in the house? Were you camping in a tent? What was your sleeping situation?
I slept in that screened-in porch.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was so cool that they were, because of the fact that, like I was chuckling about earlier, that she was like, I'm not putting this recorder down at the wood line because that means I would have to go walk down there again to get it. It's just crazy that these things were coming right up to the porch the way that they were.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was small. I mean, it wasn't like these big parcels. They were only 5-acre parcels. So it wasn't like, you know, it was this house remote by itself. It was relatively secluded. I mean, the other neighbors was only, what, 100 yards away,
yeah.
Something like that, 120 yards maybe, if the most. But yeah, they would come, and how often it came by also, I mean, that's what I couldn't understand, like, we're going down to the water right there on the sound, why, like, there wasn't, like, a big outcropping, like, there would be tons of shellfish, you know, attached, or I couldn't find any reason for them to keep going there, other than I think they got that Donna was bringing that one, the whoopee man, back a lot.
Yeah, that one seemed to really be infatuated with her, the whoopee wookie guy.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
and yeah, you hear that all the time. And I mean, if I was a single female, I mean, I, you know, female by myself out there, I'd be extra afraid, you know, like, because it seems like it's a romantic interest, which is a lot scarier than something that wants to eat you, I think.
Yeah. go ahead and eat me. Knock me out. Eat me up. Don't – the other stuff, you can leave that. No, thank you.
So I can only imagine how unsettling that is for, you know, especially when you're not trying – like, for me, I'm like, oh, I'd love it. You know, I'm into Bigfoot. You know, I'm not really too worried about him. But to not even know about him, to kind of this realization that, yeah, at first they always usually think it's some creep out in the woods, you know, some guy or something. And then they're kind of right. Yeah. I mean, it's a creepy guy who's just way taller and covered in hair.
Yeah.
But I'm always thinking, like, oh, you guys had it so, you know, like, that's the dream. Like, I'd just be like, man, you guys are so lucky that they'd get so mad. Like, we're not lucky, you know, whoever, you know, who I'd be talking to about this.
Right.
They're not the first people I've talked to like that. You know, like you, there's plenty of women that are out there, like, whose husbands are gone at night or they're single or whatever. And they have this same kind of situation. You know, these things come around and creep them out, peek in windows and bang on the house a lot. And yeah, I think the house bang, I think is what the Quinaults I was talking to a lot. They said when the house got slapped, it was because they wanted food, like some kind of treat or and if they went to town and came back, if they didn't bring back a Big Mac for it, it would come up and like break stuff on, like break lights in the house or bash the house real hard or, you know, break a toy out in the yard or swing set or something, like, so that every time they went to town, they'd have to buy the thing a Big Mac.
Well, I'd be pissed too if somebody didn't bring me back a Big Mac after a McDonald's trip. Yeah, for them to come that close, with Donna being there by herself, and we keep that is something that just we keep saying, because it was, to Donna, of course, the biggest factor of the whole thing. And their actions would change when Greg would come home. And it seems like they would almost kind of throw a fit, like, oh, this guy's back. Like, let's go. We need to get back to our routine. And she had a really, really set routine. And when that got broken up, they got pretty pissed. And the fact that you mentioned that it was a possible romantic kind of an interest, I think you're spot on with that, because with that, where the bench was and the tree, basically right below the deck there, she would get left those blue tiles and then the shells. At one point, in fact, David was laughing about this because he's like, I didn't know about this. She had left like a peanut butter jar and then taken that baby doll, that damn baby doll, down to the wood line. It had under its clothes. Now, this is cool and creepy. Under its clothes, on its belly, was the button to activate this damn thing. I think it was a laugh, I think.
Creepy, oh, yeah.
Creepy
yeah,
damn
yeah.
doll laugh, of course. And she had heard it going off. And you're going, oh, you know, like that would just, that might be a point where I go, okay, that is creepy, because that means that they were watching her push that button and knew where the button was. It was under the clothes.
Yeah, that I saw that doll. It was it wasn't working when I saw it, but that had to be so creepy.
Yeah. And not to mention the whole not to even start to bring up the fact that it would, you know, call the dogs and Greg's voice and all that. And I think that's the point where Greg was going, well, this is really some stuff going on here, right? So Layla and Bridget being called out into the woods. Have you ever heard with your own ears anything like that, them trying to speak or any of the samurai chatter?
Yeah, I've heard samurai chatter a couple times, like I think 4 times now. Once it was on Australia, actually. Saying human words, we got on tape one time when we were in the Apache Reservation, the Hickory Apache Reservation, back in 2004. We were down there. It's where I had my best sighting ever, actually. And there's these we were right on the Continental Divide. There's these big box canyons up in there, like huge deep gullies, like 100 to 300 foot deep canyons. It's real tight, narrow walled, you know, like classic desert Southwest. And there was a female elk, there was a huge elk herd there. And there was this female elk was running around scared, bleating down below. And we were hearing, hiya, hiya. And the Apaches, when they heard that, their eyes got real big. They said that was like an old, when they were hunting, that's what they'd say when they were telling each other where they were, like when they were coordinating around something, they'd go, hiya, hiya. That's what the old Apaches were. They said that the Bigfoots did that too. And when they heard that, they were just, oh no, that they knew for sure that's what it was. And they were pretty tripped out. But I don't think I've ever heard them saying any words like English. I don't think I've ever heard them try to do any English.
Yeah, and actually, I can play that really quickly for folks. I know I said go to 300, but I have it right here. Let's see if I've got the right one. We can play a couple of those. There's Wookie Whoopie Man. Were you able to hear those, Bobo?
Yeah.
So we got Layla, Bridget in there. So that's the, you know, that's what we're dealing with out there, guys, is really, truly intelligent creatures.
Oh, undoubtedly. I mean, yeah, just to not be in zoos yet, it just tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, and who wouldn't want to avoid us, really? I mean, people always go, well, they're not proven, they're not out there because we haven't found one yet. But I always go back to the story of the North Pond Hermit, you know about that guy? He said,
Yeah,
he's like, screw society, and he's in Maine, and he goes out into the woods and was able to stay out there for, what, 25 years, something damn crazy. And he never built a fire. He never really got spotted except for one time, I think, over that entire time. But, you know, as badass as that is, and as impressive as that is for him to get away with that for as long as he did, he still had to break into homes to get gear, to get food, you know, because we're not built for that terrain. We are not built to be out there like that for super extended periods of time, especially since he couldn't put up a tent because he didn't want to be found. So
right. These
things are just, they're built for business, for the business that is staying the hell away from human beings.
Yeah, that's Moneymaker said that one time, a long time ago. He said their whole lifestyle is like that of a fighter pilot down behind enemy lines.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Yeah, because they know it's literally their survival. It wouldn't be good news for them if everyone's like, oh, okay, Bigfoot is actually real, and all these Bigfoot kooks are not actually that kooky.
Right. Yeah, then, but a lot of those natives, too, are freaked. Well, I know in Washington, some of the tribes up there, part of their story is that when Bigfoot's discovered by the outsiders, that's the end of their world. That's the end of the world.
Mm,
yeah. It's the end of the tribe's existence, and it's the end of the Sasquatch's existence.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate saddest thing, I think, is, you know, it's sad enough to go to a zoo and you see a silverback gorilla. And when I was still living in Ohio, went to the zoo there, Cleveland Zoo, a few times. And this poor silverback gorilla was sitting with his back to the glass, but he was on the opposite wall where the door would open and the keeper would come in to feed him. Every once in a blue moon, I'm sure he would get any visitors. But he was sat at that same position every single time I saw him. He was sitting there with his, you know, back rounded, like he's completely depressed. How could he not be? And that's all he did. And so when I think of a Bigfoot being in a cage or a zoo, it that definitely breaks my heart.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're too human-like to... I just think people, you know, I think there'll be enough public outcry against it that it wouldn't happen.
You're really well read and knowledgeable on some of these native stories about them. What have you heard one that was kind of, you know, jarring to you, or that you're like, oh man, that would suck?
In what sense?
Well, I mean, not to be go down a really dark path, but as far as you know, keeping them at bay, especially when it came to women, like taking the women or something like that. Have you ever heard of someone that had actually said they lost someone like that or going missing in that fashion?
Oh yeah. Back in, I think it was 2005, I was with Yams and a couple other guys. We were up in Washington and we were going to a well-known researcher's spot. And the roads were all closed out there. There had been a huge storm and there's slides and trees down. So this road had been blocked off for like, they hadn't even opened it for like 2 years. And we went up to the, we hiked in not too far. We went up the trail about a half mile and got to an overlook. And I did some Ohio House back down into the watershed up where there's a lot of stories out of. And after about 20 minutes, we were sitting there, we're just chilling. Oh, two trees were torn down directly across the river from us after I did those calls. And this was like, you know, middle of the day, noon, something like that, lunchtime. And I just did a couple of Ohio houses, and from across the river, half mile away, just these trees get too, and you could tell it was green too. It wasn't like a snag. It was like something living just getting ripped down. And then about 20 minutes after that, these kids come down around the corner. There's this big Indian kid in the front with, you know, he's got his pocket knife out, and they're coming down real cautious because they had heard my calls, and he'd heard those before, and he'd seen a Bigfoot. It turns out he was an Athabascan native from Alaska. And I stayed in touch with him for years because he told me this story when I met him, and I got to talk to his grandma on the phone one time. Was back in, I think it was 1942, it was during World War II, 42 or 43, the natives on the Yukon were gathering up berries. They were picking berries down by the on the river, and his grandma and another woman were on one side. This is these sandbars basically with bushes on them. And they're walking around, and they see all of a sudden a fresh, like just made Bigfoot track, a big one. And they knew that there was one around. So they started calling for their friend, let's go. Like, you know, and nothing, she was just disappeared, gone. They found the tracks. Some of the guys came back later with, you know, like the warriors, and they came down. They could see where her tracks got picked up by the Sasquatch tracks and carried off. And then about 9 months or 10 months later, they were their drying house. They were catching the summer run salmon. They were drying them in the drying house, and it got raided by the Sasquatch. And they're like, "Oh man!" Like they're pissed. So they dug a big pit. I guess the story goes they dug this big pit in front of the doorway that was like 15, 18 feet deep or something like that. And they put hides and blankets out, and then sprinkled sand over it, so it was like a, you know, booby trap. The next night, they heard all this screaming, and like they caught a Sasquatch, this crazy like howling screams and blood curdling, you know. And they went out there, and it was the woman who had been kidnapped like 10 months earlier. And she was totally stark raving mad, and she never spoke again. They supposedly kept her tied up in a cage for a year until she quit like acting like a wild animal. And then she never spoke the native tongue again, but she would like hand gesture for things, and she could understand what you were saying, but she just never talked again. And she died like a year before I met this kid. And then we called his grandma, and she told me the whole story, and I was like, man, that's a real story, you know. Like, so she was crazy from the Bigfoot. Yeah, because the Sasquatch was there too that night when she fell in the hole. They think he just jumped out because, you know, as a Sasquatch, he just jumped out of the hole, and she got stuck, and it took off and left her there. So they knew it was, you know, it had been with the Sasquatch. I just can't imagine what her life had been like. It must have just been, I mean, it drove her totally insane. So it had to just be like the ultimate horror. I mean, you hear stories about people getting killed by him, but that's just like, you know, a minute of terror or whatever, however long, yeah, or quicker. And where she endured like 10 months of just craziness.
Oh, I can't imagine that. Yeah, that's what we were saying earlier. Like, just kill me, please.
Right.
Just pick me up and hit me against a tree. That'll be fine by me versus the alternative. You know, that reminds me of, Bobo, is the end of Willow Creek when they run into the woman that had been on the missing poster.
Yeah.
And she was just moaning and groaning. She wasn't asking for help to get out of there. Like, she was also mentally broken.
Right. Yeah. That's it. You'd imagine that'd be the response. You'd just be like a zombie, I'd imagine.
Yeah. There was it's a pretty horrible movie, laughably so, but I think it's either Primal Rage or Primal. I can't remember if it's one of those two iterations. It's where the Bigfoot they're using the bark of trees for masks, and they end up taking the man's girlfriend or wife, whatever, hostage, and, you know, back to the cave with the, you know, and I don't know where I'm going with this, but I guess I just wanted to point out that was a terrible movie. So avoid it if it comes up in your playlist.
Me.
Yeah.
I assume all Bigfoot movies are terrible movies.
Oh, they're so bad. Most of them, they really are. I do enjoy Willow Creek. It's got yams in there. I love that.
Yeah.
It's got Tom in there singing. And
I could have been in it too, but I was like, I'll just let Yams have the limelight. You know, like, I didn't want to rain on his parade at all. Then afterwards, I saw how much I loved the movie, and Bobcat was such a cool guy. I was like, oh, I wish I would have been so cool to have been in that, because I would sing that song with the Ams, we'd duet, you know, and he's like, come on, let's go. And I was like, no, I'm cool. You just go by yourself. And after I saw it, I was like, oh, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it turned out really good. I've got that in my, you know, purchased DVR list so that because I like to throw it on every once in a while and watch it. I, you know, the tent scene, I think is fantastic. Yeah. And I think that they read that they shot that, you know, one long scene as they were kind of basically screwing with the actors. And I think it's an awesome movie. I always enjoyed that.
Yeah, those are my buddies that were terrorizing them. It was Robert Letterman and Rowdy Kelly from the Bluff Creek Project that Bobcat had brought in, like, what would a Bigfoot do, like, during, like, what kind of encounters have you heard? And so they just were doing the calls and how they run around outside. And the actors inside the tent were, like, legitimately starting to get freaked out by it, you know, because it was just so, they weren't, like, going, okay, we're going to do this next. They didn't know what was coming up next. So they really were on edge.
Oh, okay, that's cool. I didn't know that. So they had no clue. So that was all just real-time reactions. That helps a lot. You can tell.
Yeah, and Bobcat said, just run it. And it's like, yeah, I think it's like a 13-minute scene or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got to rewatch. I watched it the one time. I was actually pretty hammered. I saw it on the big screen, and they did the premiere up here because they filmed it here. So, and I knew people that were in on the movie and stuff. So we went to the premiere, and it was pretty classic. Yams played live and hung out with Bobcat a little bit. And he ended up being such a nice guy. And Cliff's still in touch with him. And if I'm in LA, I'll go to his comedy shows on Tuesday nights. He's a really good dude. And I didn't realize how funny he was. Like, I just thought he did that stupid Police Academy, like, kind of skit thing. I didn't realize he was, like, a super funny comedian, right, too.
Yeah, he is awesome. And who would have thought that, you know, looking back on those Police Academy flicks, that he'd be at all give a crap about Bigfoot? Pretty awesome for us.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a Patty tattoo on his forearm.
Yeah, even the logo for, or the artwork, the logo, the artwork for Willow Creek, I think is really cool. Love it.
It is. Yeah.
It's got that creepy vibe that sets you right up. You're like, okay, I think this is going to be good. And it is, because you're right. Most of the Bigfoot films are not so great.
You don't want to, this guy, oh God, I can't believe I just blanked his name. He gave me a copy of it's based on that Coppola's Beach story about the Coppola's Cowman, Terror in the Woods, I think it's called.
Oh, how was that one?
It was really good. It was based up in Washington on a true story back in like the 60s or 70s. And it was Michael, he's an actor in it. Michael Hall. He was he's a Bigfoot researcher. And I guess he's like one of the consultants for the Bigfoot stuff on the movie. And he was a producer on it, but he gave it to me because I didn't have a DVR player for years. And then I had that movie for a couple of years. And you know, I said, you got to watch it. And I finally watched it because everything else I watched is just, I'm like, gosh, you just owe me an hour of my life, you know, mm-hmm. I just wasted. But this one, I was like, man, that was really good.
I don't want to keep you all day, Bobo. As fun as it is just to BS with you, this has been fun. Tell me more about Bigfoot and Beyond with Cliff and whatever else you have coming up and where people can find you.
Yes, I've been doing, the last 2 years, been doing a podcast with Cliff from Finding Bigfoot called Bigfoot and Beyond with Cliff and Bobo. It comes, drops every, we just did, I think, 118th episode. Comes out every Sunday night on iHeartRadio. So yeah, working on a couple of historical documentaries. I don't want to let too much out of the cat out of the bag on it. It'll come out probably at the end of the year, looking like around a Christmas time it should be done.
That's awesome. Looking forward to that stuff. Yeah, you're busy, and you've been traveling a ton for conferences. Do you have any more of those coming up?
So I was doing a lot of conferences, and then this year I cut back on them just because they were beating me up so bad. I was committed to a couple of them, but yeah, I just canceled the rest of them for the rest of the year. I only had a few left. I'm not going to really do those anymore. Every time going back east, especially, it would just take so much out of me. And the 3-hour time change, the jet lag, and then the throwing my meds off schedule 3 hours I'd come home sick, so beat up after those things. And I'd be sick every time that I had a pull, just cancel.
That can be the best thing. And you know what, Bobo, on top of that, not just the time change thing, but now with what's going on because of COVID and people just not wanting to work, they're canceling so many flights now or delaying so many flights now because they just don't have the crew to run these flights. So now you run the risk of getting stuck somewhere because there's nobody to fly you home.
Oh my God. That happened there and back this last one. Those long days, those long travel days, and then just the stress, like, is my, because you're late, then you're going to miss your connection. Well, I live in Northern California, up in the Redwoods. And World War II, when they were trying to train the pilots to fly through the London fog, they looked for they found the foggiest place in America, built a runway there to train them to fly out of the fog. And that's our home airport now. That runway they built to be in the foggiest place in the country is the Humboldt Airport. So I deal with extra, yeah, it's a hassle to fly in and out.
Yeah, sometimes it's best just to shut her down, especially when it's your health at stake and that's what's going on. You made the right decision.
Yeah, and I didn't have, and the other thing is that I just felt like I was kind of ripping people off because I didn't have anything new to show. Like I didn't have any like discoveries or like a new movie to show or a book to promote or you know, no new projects that were like really interesting. You know, it's just kind of like same old, same old. And I'd feel terribly like, God, because the same people show up to the conferences, you know, it's like,
right.
you get tons of repeats and they, not only the same conference, but you get a lot of people to go to like multiple conferences. They go, you know, they kind of hit the circuit, what they're part of the country and which happens to be, you know, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, that's the hotbed, you know, for conferences because they're the best turnout and people really embrace it and they're great. So, I'm just done with that part of it.
Okay. So, well, here's the idea. Maybe you should go on Naked and Afraid and then you have all these new stories to tell at the conferences, right?
The story would be like, I quit after a day after I had like 10 million mosquito bites. I just said, screw this.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of Naked and Afraid though, there's been several stories of Bigfoot encounters out there, like Belize and then, a couple other places we've heard about.
Really?
You never heard that Belize story?
No.
Oh yeah, the guy. He had, I forget what they call it down there, not Mapinguari. I forget the local name for it. Yeah, those Belize swamps, where the mountains come down out of the swamps. That's where this guy was, and he had a Bigfoot coming around him, basically almost every night he was out there, for like 3 weeks, and he actually had audio recordings of some of the audio and the. It's you should check it out.
How have I not heard about this? I love Naked and Afraid and Bigfoot stuff. I feel way out of the loop. That is so cool. It would come in every night?
I think so. He's on an interview. We heard him. He's on some podcast talking about it. It might have been Sasquatch Chronicles or I'm not sure what it was. I heard him on something.
I need to check that out. And then we've got that Troy. What the heck is his name? Anyway, he's gone on the show and said, I've seen Bigfoot and it terrified him and he would never want to see one again. And that was, I think, one of the reasons that he was nervous to do Naked and Afraid is because he's out in the, you know, in the middle of nowhere in the bush. He's like, I don't want to see a Bigfoot again. So Troy, I think it's Troy something. Dang it. See, Bobo, we need help with our names today.
I know.
I'm struggling too. Holy smokes. But anyway, well, Bobo, thank you so much. I hope that I get to talk to you again soon. This was a lot of fun to have you on for a chat today.
Yeah, we'll be talking soon because you're coming on our show next.
That sounds like a plan.
All right, Shannon. Well, I enjoyed it.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bark. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. divided on us. They will say, no, we don't believe literally in reincarnation. That after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say, reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you're being reincarnated. If you are liberated, you understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.